Cultured Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
God told me to tell you this.
That's paganism.
Do you really expect and anticipate that the divine voice of God can be heard by you?
That's horoscope reading.
Standing in the office of the prophet of God.
That's reading tea leaves.
You can't have a relationship to God if you can't hear God.
That is not biblical Christianity.
You want to hear God speak to you? Read your Bible. If you want to hear God speak to you audibly, read it out loud. I promise you, 100% guaranteed, you will hear Him speak.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Another chance for division. This is Wretched Radio. Oh, Jimmy.
Yes.
What did you think about the 6 bunker bombs being dropped on the Iranian nuclear facilities? Do you think the number of bombs was the correct amount to drop?
I don't want to talk about this.
Come on. Come on. Do you think number 6 bombs, was that the right number of bombs?
No.
Heretic. We're done.
No, we're finished.
It's all over, Jimmy.
I'm so
sorry.
We
cannot have fellowship with one another. Hey, if that sounded exaggerated, I'm not so sure it was. Honestly, this is a hot topic, and I know temperatures tend to run a little close to about 211. It isn't hard for us to boil over. We have opinions about these things. But might I encourage us, as we consider what is going on in the Middle East, specifically with 6 bunker bombs being dropped on Iran, that we do it remembering where this falls in the level of theological triage. Is it an essential? Can we agree? No. Is it a secondary issue? I would be hard-pressed to make that case. Tertiary? If we're talking about theological triage, theology, I'm not even sure this makes it to the third tier. In fact, it barely makes itself onto the list of theological issues at all. How does it get there? I think because we're dealing with the Abrahamic covenant. We're dealing with the promise to Abraham, the irrevocable promise that there would be a land, nation, seed blessing. And that's never going, that will forever be fulfilled by God, because it was a covenant that he cut by himself. It wasn't quid pro quo. It was God's promise. Therefore, we know God has a plan for, I'm going to call it, the biblical covenant people of the Old Testament. You say, why do you have to labor so hard? Just call them Jewish people or Israel. Because I think, as we heard last week between Tucker Carlson and Ted Cruz, it just gets muddy. It's really mushy. We're going to post that presentation on YouTube tomorrow. I think it's helpful. I had a chance to listen to Al Mohler's, I was going to call it Breakpoint, but that was Chuck Colson. The briefing, right? It's Al Mohler's
That's it,
the briefing.
Yeah.
And he was talking about this subject. What should be the Christian attitude toward Israel? And it was basically the same as my opinion. So I'm glad Al's right on this one. And I think we played the John MacArthur response to the question, hey, how do we deal with what's going on in Israel? And I think that John's answer, can I call him John? His answer was on point too. But it's a little tricky to get your brain around. It isn't as clean, I think, as we'd like it, because you want to go, well, that's Israel. But what constitutes Israel? Well, there's currently a secular government that constitutes Israel. What is the promises in Genesis 12? It is toward a covenant-keeping people. So these are Jewish people of the promise of Abraham through Isaac. So we're talking about that theological entity, let's say, versus the political entity of Israel. Where's the overlap? Where's the commonality? And the answer is, it gets a little bit difficult. Now, we've already treated this subject, so I'm not going to rehash it. You can see the video on the YouTube machine. But today, knowing that this issue is just, it, it can we agree this is a little tricky? Can we all have a perhaps a little room for disagreement on this, because we recognize, all right, so you define the difference between theological Israel and political modern day Israel. Go. And it, you're going to kind of, I think you're going to stammer a little bit. So what's the difference? So are any of those there? Are any of this, that? And it gets a little bit, now, please note, it's crystal clear in my mind because I'm a talk show host, but it's not that simple of an issue to work through and have really clear lines, which I always prefer over kind of, well, the point being, this is not an essential. It's not a secondary. I do not even believe it's a tertiary. In other words, let's not fight over this. Let's not split over this. Don't we have other things we could and should be splitting over instead of this issue? So now we are confronted with the question of the recent advancement of the conflict in the Middle East. America has engaged itself in the struggle. Should we have? Is that any of our business? Another opportunity for us to get mad at one another? How do we sort it? And interestingly, I think it falls underneath the same umbrella as the previous conversation. It's a wisdom issue. It's a wisdom issue. These subjects are complex. Now, we try to simplify as much as we can. Otherwise, you'd never make a decision. You couldn't possibly render a verdict if you consider everything, because it would just be turmoil in your brain. But I think that we need to recognize, working through whether a nation should engage itself in military conflict is never simple. It's not always just that tidy, but I do believe we have some biblical principles that can guide us through it. This goes back to the days of Thomas Aquinas, who you have to admit, while he may have extrapolated some of this from the Bible, I think it's just well-informed Christian thinking. It's just war theory. Just war. Not as in only war. No, just. Is it justified? Is it righteous? Is it something that the Christian can affirm? And Thomas Aquinas, it depends on who you read, doing a summary of just war theory. I've seen a list go higher than six. But give or take 5 or 6 points. Let's go through those points, and then you can decide what your take is on the bunker bombs being dropped. And remember, if we disagree, I hate you, and you're a heretic.
Thank you.
You know, mate, I think I kind of completely forgot what I was actually talking about. This is courtesy of Got Questions, who did a rather pithy job of summarizing just war theory. Number one, a just war is declared by a legitimate government. Ooh, this could preach. It is not about individuals, vigilantes, squads of people saying, "Get them, boys!" No, it has to be a recognized governmental entity. Just war tries to bring a little bit of organization to what can be very, very messy. It's got to be a nation state. So it can't be even a rebellious group inside of a nation. It must be the authorized government of a particular zip code. Also, war, including the intention to attack, must be formally and officially announced before a nation engages in hostilities. Got to let them know it's coming. Why? Because it might stave off war. The goal in all of this is to not go to war. The preference is not to. Now, we see war in the Old Testament. And we see it plenty. And we need to remember those commands to Israel to go to war with the other nations, to purge the nation for the sake of the Abrahamic covenant, should not be applied by us. But we do see some principles. War is never good. People die. People get hurt. People are separated from their families. Evil things happen in war. It ain't something that the Lord rejoices in, but he does clearly permit it. And there are times when he commanded it because it was right and just. So what made those conflicts right and just, but we can't take those principles and apply them because God told them to do this. Why? Because of the Abrahamic covenant, so that there would be a seed out of this peculiar people. God told them to go to war, and therefore it is righteous and just because God told them to do it, and everything he commands is right and good. Now, we do not have that sort of theocracy. It'll be nice when someday it is, but now we don't. And so we can't use Old Testament Israel to say, well, we can just go kill people, or we can just start waging war nilly-willy. No, we can't. Number two, it's got to be last resort. You got to try diplomacy. You got to try legal. You've got to just squeeze them other ways. But war is not good. Have you done that? Number three, it's got to be a just cause. It has to be something that it's righteous. Now, here's the trick. I did a little research in my imagination, and I concluded there has never been a conflict where the party that started to wage war didn't think it was just. We always think it's just. The question, of course, is the current conflict righteous? We'll discuss that next on Wretched Radio.
Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. Picture this. Every morning, countless Christians are waking up and wondering how they're going to navigate today's increasingly complex and upside-down world. And that's where Fortis Institute comes in. Not just another ministry, but your daily partner in standing firm in biblical truth. I mean, you've probably noticed that we're different from our daily podcasts like Integrated with Dr. John Krotz or Thrive with Pastor Brad Bigney. We're bringing together some of the most trusted voices in Christianity to help you and your local church thrive. But here's the thing. This mission, well, it takes resources, and that's where you come in. By becoming an ongoing monthly gospel partner, you're not just supporting a ministry, you're investing in the spiritual fortification of countless believers and local churches across the nation. So will you join us? Visit FortisInstitute.org right now to become an ongoing monthly gospel partner, and together we can help Christians stand strong in their faith no matter what challenges tomorrow brings. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Beautiful campus. All of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said, number six for preparing students for the real world. All that. Plus, the Masters University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
For 25 years, Fortis Institute has been building something powerful, a reservoir of biblical truth deep enough to change lives and strong enough to transform churches. But we've realized something very profound. Truth was never meant to be contained. It was meant to flow freely, reaching every single person, every hungry heart, every searching mind, and that's why we're doing something unprecedented. We're breaking the dam. Truth Unhindered isn't just a campaign name, it's our vision for the future. It's about removing every barrier between solid teaching and those who need it the most. We have extraordinary plans for the second half of 2025, but to make this moment possible, we need your partnership now more than ever. Right now, through the end of June, every gift you give will be matched. Your generosity today becomes a flood of truth tomorrow. Just visit FortisInstitute.org/truth right now before June 30th and help us break the dam and let the truth flow unhindered. FortisInstitute.org/truth.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the Bread of Life, Just as God gave life to his people in the desert by providing manna, so Jesus gives life to his people through his body broken on the cross, which we remember in the breaking of the bread in communion. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Making the point perfectly, this is Wretched Radio. Oh, Jimmy.
Yes.
What number of Just War Theory do you think we're on?
Five?
Yeah, exactly. I know. Even when I read through Got Questions take on Just War Theory, they had 5 points. But even as I'm going through the article and dissecting it, marking it up for this conversation, I'm like, okay, which one is, okay, is that one related? Okay, I thought that was a separate point, and you experienced the same thing.
I did.
This subject is manageable, it's doable, but it does require a little bit of give and take, and it does require, I think, more time than just responding the way that we tend to respond. I'm telling you, we're all being GR, put 2 zeros there, MED'd. Because she can't use that word without it affecting something out there on social media. In that, you and I just, we see the headline, that's it. Seriously, I don't know why people write articles anymore, because most of us just read headlines these days. And that's enough. I got it. Or somebody that I like, somebody who's popular, they have a position, therefore that's my position. Well, Just War Theory requires more than that. It requires working through it holistically. There are so many angles to this. So let's continue to try to get the conflict in the Middle East unbefuddled. You render your own verdict. I'll render mine. Just War Theory, Thomas Aquinas. First one is, it has to be a government agency. Can't be a bunch of vigilantes. Or it, furthermore, it can't be a leader who disobeys the laws of the land. Let's, if it were in a country where they said you can never send more than 10 tanks for any reason without getting 50 people to sign off on it. Well, if the guy did it, then he's rogue and it's no longer a just war. Rules have to be followed is the stressor here. War has got to be declared. That's, Jimmy, you thought that was number two.
Right.
But that's underneath. It's got to be a legitimate government because, again, you can number these any way you want. So throw out the numbering system and let's just catch some of the angles and aspects of this. It has to be last resort. You got to try diplomacy. You've got to try sanctions because this stuff is nasty. I got to tell you, I remember watching, there's been a number of really good Winston Churchill biographies lately. I mean, within the last 5 years, maybe 7 years. And I couldn't help but stop and think, ooh, what must it be like to make that decision? And then I put myself into the shoes of Winston Churchill or an FDR. To make that decision, boys are going to go marching as to war, real war. They're going to die. Their bodies are going to be blown up. This should never be treated rather casually. Yeah, bomb them. Let's just bomb them. Well, okay, we might be justified in doing that, but it can't be indiscriminate. We want to avoid it. I honestly, even if I were the fellow that had to sign off on whether or not the nation were going to go to war, it would be so difficult to do, and it should be. So I think the Christian posture regarding war is, hold on. Have we thought this through? Is this legit? It must be fought for a just cause. Define that. What is a just cause? Well, it's what I want. No, that doesn't make it just. You might want that. You might want to take over that part of somebody's nation because that's where you like to go skiing and you'd rather not pay the tariff to go there every year. That just isn't just. It can't be justified in our own mind. This is from God Questions. The intended outcome of the war itself must be morally upright. Goals such as freeing people from death, freeing people from persecution. And wow, I don't know if you saw the bevy of stories this morning. Woofta. Over the weekend, the number of terror attacks on Christians, I saw Syria and Lebanon and Africa, they're burying our Christian brothers and sisters as we speak because of the Islamic terrorism that happens. all around the globe against our brothers and sisters. Freeing them from that, that would be just. Stopping another nation's conquest might meet this definition. Might. You got to know stuff. Do they really have those chemicals? Do we really know their intentions? Have they historically been a bellicose people? Have they stated what they're doing? Are they doing it in secret? Do we already know that they're plotting and strategizing to destroy a nation via A-bombs? Those are all variables. That going back now, what, 20-some years, this was the George Bush debate. And rightly so. Are they really going to try to wipe us out? We need to be able to say with not, you can't say with total certainty, but we need to be able to say, yeah, they're intending to do harm and this will stave off that harm. That might be a justification. A desire, however, to gain more land or to punish another nation for an insult, that would be an unjust goal. Number four, a just war seeks prudent goals. If it doesn't have a chance of succeeding, don't wage it. If you're a small island, you're not going to go to war against Russia. You're going to lose. And there's no point in creating mayhem and death and destruction. Likewise, a war cannot be justified unless its goals, even noble ones, are proportionate to its toll of death and destruction. Do you see why this is a wisdom issue? And do you see why we really want godly leaders in Washington to think these things through? Because life is at stake here. This is something that I think only a heart informed by the Bible can really wrangle through rightly. Even noble goals must be proportionate to its toll of death and destruction. Example, the goal of improving another nation's educational system doesn't reach that level. You can't engage in open warfare for that. You might think, hey, that's a really big deal. That'll promote human flourishing. And you know what? I agree with that. But that doesn't justify going to war because remember, somebody's sons and now these days daughters are going to be killed. And I know when a nation is stoked against another nation. I don't know that we have anything quite like that today, but I remember as a kid, it was Russia and the nuclear war and hiding underneath your desk. And you can be kind of like ready to go because of what you think is a perceived threat. But I can't let that stoking override criteria. Wisdom has got to be applied. Number whatever we're on, a just war uses moral means. According to just war theory, these noble ends or goals do not justify any and all actions to achieve victory. So we have to do it. There's got to be some rules of war, basically. The ends do not justify the means. War is restrained to proportionate levels of violence and does not engage in excessive or cruel use of force. Are you thinking about America's engagement over the weekend? How's America doing, in your opinion? This principle also requires making an effort to avoid civilian casualties, undue destruction, or actions that would unreasonably affect those uninvolved in the conflict. I can just hear a northerner and southerner discussing this particular point with the march through the South and the burning down of cities, which, by the way, apparently Huntsville, Alabama, did not get torched. A lot of homes there, the beautiful early 1800 homes there. It's magnificent, nevertheless. Moral means extends to details such as treatment of captured soldiers and civilians and efforts to reconcile after the conflict is over. Now, there's a sixth one that's not included here, and that is the terms of peace cannot be, well, I'll just say unjust. They can't be onerous. They can't be, well, like the terms of World War I. So oppressing the nation. And what sprang from that? World War II Adolf Hitler found fertile soil to encourage people to be nationalistic. And in part, World War II was to escape the imposition of the treaty after World War I. So it has to be proportionate. It can't be vindictive. Just war theory acknowledges war is not a good thing. So there you have an outline. Perfect? No. But is it enough to help us work through this? I think it is. But is it enough to keep us from going to war with one another when we disagree on the subject? And tragically, the answer to that question is for some people, probably not. Why are so many of us on edge on these things, honestly? I get it. They're important. I do understand. But wow, could we perhaps put our weapons away aimed at one another as we discuss what nations are doing as they aim their guns at one another? This is Wretched Radio.
And it's now time for your daily Fortis News Break, a production of Fortis Institute. The Make America Healthy Again movement has gained some pretty serious corporate momentum. General Mills announced it's jumping on the train, promising to remove artificial food dyes from all U.S. retail products by 2027. School products will be dye-free even sooner, by the end of 2026. A new study reveals that nearly half of American churchgoers now attend more than one congregation regularly, with 46% participating in multiple churches, either in person or virtually. The Hartford Institute found this trend exploded during COVID when live streaming became commonplace, essentially creating a generation of church shoppers. While 90% still consider one place their home church, the convenience factor has fundamentally changed how believers engage with their church family. The deadly persecution of Christians in Nigeria continues, escalating as Fulani herdsmen killed five more believers last week, adding to the 50 Christians slaughtered there just 2 months ago. Nigeria accounts for 69% of Christians killed worldwide for their faith. Somehow, though, this genocide rarely makes Western headlines. Meanwhile, in America's ongoing battle against institutional capture, the EDUCATE Act is targeting medical schools that force DEI compliance on students and faculty. Representatives Greg Murphy and Senator John Kennedy's legislation would strip federal funding, including student loans, from schools requiring political or ideological conformity. Representative Murphy says that these mandates debase medicine integrity, and he's right. When future doctors spend more time learning about pronouns than pathology, yeah, patients are going to suffer. The cultural pendulum continues swinging as GLAAD erupts over Hollywood's 23.6% drop in LGBTQ representation, giving failing grades to Disney, Netflix, and Warner Brothers. Speaking of media bias, the Associated Press perfectly demonstrated their partisan hackery in covering anti-white discrimination in agriculture. Under Biden, when white farmers sued over being excluded from loan forgiveness programs, AP buried the discrimination angle. But now, with Trump in office, suddenly, AP headlines scream about discrimination against white farmers when the exact same policies continue. Same discrimination, different headlines, just all depending on who occupies the White House. Finally, a sobering reminder about digital privacy as the UK fined 23andMe $3.1 million over a massive genetic data breach affecting 155,000 users. When we hand over our most intimate biological data to companies focused on profits, then protection, we probably shouldn't be surprised when hackers come calling. And that wraps up today's Fortis News Break. I'm Jimmy Hicks. If you want more, you can download Fortis Plus or sign up to become a Fortis Insider for exclusive daily content. You can do both at FortisInstitute.org. And don't forget, you can subscribe to Fortis News on your favorite podcast app in order to get these updates daily. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the Bread of Life. Just as God gave life to his people in the desert by providing manna, so Jesus gives life to his people through his body broken on the cross, which we remember in the breaking of the bread in communion.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Salute to some dudes in Michigan. This is Wretched Radio. If in your church has never considered a safety plan. Perhaps the story from Michigan will encourage you to get on it. I know it's not your favorite subject. I know a church should be a safe space, but these days it's not. Two stories within the last week that I think should you got to at least talk about a church. You got to work through it. You got to sort it. And I, if a church makes a decision, look, we can't do that. We don't want a safety plan. We don't want people packing heat. Okay, I got Alpharetta Bible Church to worry about. What you do is what you do. But perhaps these stories will encourage you to think about what are you going to do to protect your people? Because it's getting lawless out there. Young man, 31 years old, having attended a church a couple of times in the last year with his mom, drives into the parking lot, starts shooting. Here's the deets. Several staff members from the church approached the gunman. One parishioner struck the gunman with his vehicle. Way to go, dude. I'm not going to be squishy on this. Way to go, dude. You had a vehicle, dude's firing a gun, you run him over. When you are doing that, you forfeit your life. That's simple as that. That's why the death penalty is right. When you are murdering human beings, you have forfeited your life. Humans are so valuable. If you take the life of one of them, you have forfeited your own life. This is not being a vigilante. This is being a hero. This is being somebody who's trying to protect other people and put his own life at risk. Why? Because the gunman was shooting at the vehicle repeatedly. So it wasn't like the guy just hunkered down in his truck to mow him over. No, he was under fire. Then, at least two staff members shot the gunman, causing the fatal wounds. In other words, they were packing heat. Your church, if it doesn't have a safety plan, has got a little bit of work in front of you. First of all, you as a church need to decide, what are we comfortable with? And I think different churches are going to come up with different decisions. Should you conclude, we can't have our people be sitting ducks. We can't do that. We are going to come up with some sort of plan, which means we can stop somebody who is intending to murder our parishioners. It's going to be a challenge because you're going to need to deal with state laws. They vary from state to state. Furthermore, one of your biggest struggles is going to be insurance, because your church insurance company might not cover if the church has a safety plan that involves firearms. So you need to check those things out. You need to check it out with your insurance. Make sure if you are going to have people that are trained, you need to have an actual plan. And by the way, there's plenty of them out there. If you want what some of these plans are, just Google them. They're thorough and they're detailed. And you probably got somebody in your church who maybe has some law enforcement experience. Let them lead the way, because you need to have this organized. It can't be nilly-willy. You don't want just people running around like the Wild Wild West. Have it organized. Make sure that your insurance covers incidents, and then enforce the plan. I really, really find this so distasteful that we churches have to do this, okay, you don't have to. We choose to. And I wonder, I'm just wondering out loud, does the church need to let the world know we're not opposed to carrying firearms on Sunday morning? If you intend to do us harm, you will be responded to, sort of like the people in Florida. Did you see the clip of the Brevard County Sheriff talking to the people who are thinking about rioting? This is tough talk. And this, by the way, I want this from my Romans 13 government officials who have been given the sword to protect us and keep us safe. I want more of this. Now, should the church be talking about like this? You be the judge.
So I'm gonna break it down for you, all right? And if somebody wants to know what I mean by turn violent, all right, this is what I mean. If you resist lawful orders, you're going to jail. Let me be very clear about that. If you block an intersection or a roadway in Brevard County, you are going to jail. If you flee arrest, you're going to go to jail tired, because we are going to run you down and put you in jail. If you try to mob rule a car in Brevard County, gathering around it, refusing to let the driver leave, in our county, you're most likely going to get run over and dragged across the street. If you spit on us, you're going to the hospital and in jail. If you hit one of us, you're going to the hospital and jail and most likely get bitten by one of our big, beautiful dogs that we have here. If you throw a brick, a firebomb, or point a gun at one of our deputies, we will be notifying your family where to collect your remains at, because we will kill you graveyard dead. We're not going to play. This has got to stop. You're watching what's taking place out there. You're seeing police officers that are being attacked, being spit on, being put in harm's way just for doing their jobs. You're seeing ICE agents that are being targeted for doing their jobs. And you're seeing obstructionists that are doing all of this, standing in the way of law and order.
That's the issue. We need law and order. If people do not have an internal moral mechanism, we need an external enforcer. Simple as that. If people cannot guide their own actions, then you need somebody to guide them. Hence the government and their primary role to keep people safe. I love tough talk like this. Hey, Jimmy, this is just as out of curiosity, I'm not suggesting that I want to move there. Could you check out the cost of living in Brevard County? I like that.
Yeah.
We need that. Now, should the church be talking like that? I don't know that we should be talking like tough guys, but it seems to me that buildings that publicly let the world know we don't carry here are more vulnerable. It seems that's why schools are such fertile ground for these people who want to murder, mass murder. Does your church have a plan? By the way, the police in Michigan, they said, well, this is pretty standard fare. They said the suspect, a 31-year-old man from Romulus, they believe he was suffering from a mental health crisis. And do you know what I say to that? I don't care. I don't care. Whatever emotional struggle you have, if you know that it is wrong to pack heat, put on a vest to protect yourself while you go out hunting humans, I'm sorry. We don't need to invoke a psychiatrist or a psychologist. We were watching this show. It was kind of a mystery show, and it was clean, and it was from Scotland, I think, England. The accents, I kind of get them confused sometimes. The point is, as soon as like the bad thing happened and the first order of business was, we need to get the mental health reports. Here's the mental health question. Did you know that it was wrong to actually go into a church parking lot to intentionally shoot up an entire congregation while the kids from VBS are singing during the service? Did you know that was wrong? Yes. All righty then. Examination is over. Hello, Romans 13. Story number two, this is another guy who went about the business of murdering a pastor, claiming that he wanted to do this to a lot of people. Now, this guy could communicate. This guy could drive. Did he have some emotional issues? Might he even have had some drug issues? Sure. Did he know that it's wrong to murder a man? He did. Romans 13. The man accused of killing a longtime Arizona pastor told police he planned to murder other pastors and priests across several states. Pastor Bill was found dead in his home April 28th. He served New River Bible Chapel for decades and was well known in the community for his friendliness and love for vintage cars and planes. He said that he selected the pastor, randomly. He said he'd been camping in the desert after arriving in Arizona from California, after early release from federal prison. He claimed his motive was rooted in religious beliefs, asserting that Christianity was corrupt and that pastors and priests were misleading believers. Quote, I just drove there like 2 a.m. maybe and parked, and then I just went in there and did it. He said he crucified the pastor, and that was his plan with all of them. That's the plan, sir? So you had a strategy? You had thought in it. Sorry for your emotional struggles. Romans 13 is your book in the Bible. That is your chapter. That is your verse. And that is why these days, if the government can't keep us safe, church, I would simply ask you, do you have a plan to keep your people safe? Your church, do your church. Wow, that grammar was, I just murdered the English language. Your church needs to decide. Might be different than my church, might be different than the church down the street. But encouragement, pastor, elders, deacons, talk through it. Talk through it. We don't want to be a people that is perpetually terrified, but we don't want to be naive either. Question: does your church have a security plan? If the government is not willing to defend us well and talk tough, like I think they should, then maybe it's time we have to defend our own people. This is Wretched Radio.
You've most likely been there, sitting across from a therapist, staring at their degrees on the wall, listening while they give you a diagnosis and tell you what pill and prescription they think are going to cure all your ills. You walk out of the office carrying a label, and you wonder why you feel even heavier than you did before you walked in. That's why Dr. Greg Gifford wrote Lies My Therapist Told Me, because sometimes it's not the medication or even the diagnosis that's the real issue. It's that the whole system doesn't touch what's going on beneath the surface. Look, not every struggle is solved with a pill. Not every label tells the entire story. What if addiction's not just a disease? What if your anxiety is not just a chemical imbalance? And what if the diagnosis handed to your child is not the final word? The world gives its answers, but rarely does it ever deal with the heart. Scripture does. Order Lies My Therapist Told Me today at fortisinstitute.org/lies. That's fortisinstitute.org/lies. You know what's remarkable? Currently, right now, at this present time, there are over 4 million podcasts in production. And something unexpected has happened. Fortis Institute's podcasts have quietly climbed the charts, all of them in at least the top 5% of all podcasts worldwide, 3 of them in the top 2%. Now, we're not here to shout from the rooftops about rankings. We're actually here because truth matters. For 25 years, we've been steadfast. First as Wretched Radio, then as Gospel Partners Media, now standing firm as Fortis Institute. Todd Friel, Adam Tyson, Brad Bigney, Greg Gifford, John Krotz, Libby Gloss, and real teachers addressing real issues. And you can find it all on the Fortis Plus app. Completely free. Hundreds of hours of content already there. Absolutely free. Download it, use it, share it, and then partner with us at fortisinstitute.org, because we truly believe the church deserves better. fortisinstitute.org. So if we were going to be honest with one another, we would have to admit that every day our phone buzzes with celebrity scandals and political outrage and notifications of TikTok trends, all the stuff that doesn't matter. But what if your phone could deliver something different? Because it can. Meet Fortis Plus. If you haven't already downloaded it yet, I want to urge you to take that opportunity right now. It's free and it will replace noise with nourishment. Picture this: 7 new pieces of content every single day. And I'm not talking clickbait or gossip. I'm talking real truth for real life. The app is already full of hundreds of hours of content. Again, completely free. And when I say free, I mean free. I don't mean hidden costs and temporary trials and premium tiers. No subscription traps at all. Because while everyone else all over the world is selling you something, we are giving something away. Fortis Plus. Download it right now where you download your apps, or just go to fortisplus.org, because what feeds your mind shapes your life.
Attributes of God. Can God make a rock so big he cannot lift it? God is all-powerful. He created the universe and everything in it, and nothing can thwart his will. So the question of the rock is nonsensical. It does not expose a problem with God, but with the thinking of the one asking the question, and they will one day have to answer to the omnipotent God. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Curmudgeon alert, curmudgeon alert. You're saying, Friel, you don't need to alert us. We expect it. Okay, fine. This is Wretched Radio. Did you catch the deet? That's right. That's singular for deets. That little line in the story of the Michigan shooter who came to murder everybody inside of the church, who was stopped in the parking lot courtesy of a car and a couple of guns. The kids were singing Vacation Bible School songs up on the platform. Did you catch that little Dietz question? Does your church do that? And if they do, have they reasoned through it? Have they considered it from an ecclesiological perspective? In other words, is that something that is appropriate to do? Now, let me just say at the jump, I don't think a church is apostate if they have the kids up front singing Sunday school songs. I'm merely bringing this to your attention because it's a hobby horse of mine. I mean, because this the story elicits a response in a conversation. It's not just something that just I'm just personally opposed to. No, I would never do such a thing. That would be inappropriate. But have we really thought through biblically if that is something that is appropriate? Because I see a number of levels that need to be considered. And again, perhaps your church can say, yep, we've sorted through it. It is justified. For your consideration, a number of things that you should work through before you put the kids up there, starting with who is qualified to lead worship. That is leading worship. If you're putting kids up front, which incidentally, as a side note, is a very, very new trend. Even when I was a kid, which I know you could argue is getting closer to ancient history, but when I was a kid, I remember the choir, it never was on the, like, up front. There were choir lofts. That's what Protestant churches did. They built lofts. They were out of sight. Why? Because they weren't to be the center of attention. They weren't to be leading worship. They were to be offering special music that you and I could sing in our hearts. So they were never put up front. This is a new trend. And so the kids going up front, this is something that historically is kind of a new thing that we're doing. And because they are up front, does that constitute leadership? And I say that because maybe I'm being duplicitous in all of this. I can imagine that if kids were preparing special music for the worship service, could that be offered in a reverent way where it's not, we're not doing a show here, where we're not doing videos of the kids because it's adorable. It's actual genuine work. There's something inside of me that says, I'm fine with that. I think that that can be reverential as a part of a worship service because it is worshiping God, but it's not leading worship. So question number one is, if the kids are up front, are they leading worship? Which leads to question number two. Is that worship or is it a show? Got to ask the question, is that worship or is it something that we do because the kids, they really like it. It makes it special. It caps off the week. And it provides a lot of videos where the parents actually walk up now with their cell phones during the to videotape it to show how adorable their kid was on Sunday morning. If that's what's happening, I personally don't think that has any place in a worship service, which should have one and one only in the spotlight, Jesus Christ. And if it is not a regulated element, and doing something, having, I get it, because it's like, well, they're singing Christian songs. They're singing about Jonah. So what's the problem? Well, the problem is if we're doing it as a performance because it's adorable, that is not a regulated element of Sunday morning worship. Worship is, music is, reading the Bible is, prayer is, Lord's table is, baptisms is, preaching is, the reading of God's word is, but having the kids get up there to provide some really cool social media footage, I don't see that passing ecclesiological muster. Third consideration is the question, why? Why are we doing that? And I really do get this. I truly do get this because sometimes kids come that never go to church. Their parents, they want to dump them for a couple of hours. The other kids are going. I get it. We hope that they'll hear the gospel. But then in order to get the parents, the unchurched parents to come, we have the kids singing in Sunday service to get them to come in and hopefully they hear the gospel and hopefully they get saved. Might I suggest, I don't know that I would pound my fist real hard on this issue, but that's not what church is for. The church isn't to do things that will lure people in who otherwise would not darken the doorstep of a church. That's pragmatism. We reject that. Would I start a new denomination over this? No, I wouldn't. Would I turn my nose up at a church that has the kids up there? No. But maybe, just maybe, something to revisit and reconsider, because we want to do it God's way. We don't want to do this our way. We don't want to be pragmatic. We don't want to be low. We want Christ to be exalted, which brings me to, yes, I know I have shared this before, but I am willing to make a bet. You won't be bored hearing this a second time. I have no idea. Jim, maybe you printed this. My printer is kafritz. I hit the print button and it gets printed somewhere in the office. I don't exactly know what's going on with the printer thing. But I got my stack. And Jimmy, did you print a thing from Ray Comfort? Sermon from Ray Comfort?
I didn't know.
All right. It's Providence. I have to read it. He's treating John 20. He's talking about Jesus Christ being crucified. And he does it in such a vivid way that it's worth sharing, because this is what I think the church should do. Not just the sermon, but all of church. It should be exalting Jesus so that we love our Savior more when we're done than when we began. And I got to tell you, this is just some of the finest writing. This is just good preaching. The Bible, this is a man named Joseph of Arimathea in John chapter 20. The Bible says he was a believer, but secretly for fear of the Jews, a secret believer, because he was captive to the fear of man. The fear of man was a sneer to Joseph of Arimathea. He preferred the praises of men to the praises of God. But the Bible tells us something happened on that day of Jesus' crucifixion. Perhaps he stood at the foot of the cross and heard Jesus cry, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they do." Perhaps he had that dark, dark day. He had the light of understanding from God's law and understood this was the Messiah becoming a curse for us, being bruised for man's transgressions. Preached about this a little bit on Sunday morning. He who knew no sin became sin, that we might become the righteousness of God. It was in the context of Jesus being in the garden, and it's a succession of descriptors of how he was feeling. I'm troubled. I'm like really grieved. I'm like on the edge of dying over this horror that I am facing. It was this progression of weight that he was experiencing as he was being pressed in the garden. And I think a part of the pressing, part of the horror, this was a soul troubling horror that Jesus was experiencing for a number of reasons, but for the sake of Joseph of Arimathea, he was going to be identified as sin. He didn't become sin. He wasn't the sinner, but he took it upon himself. He was credited with our sin. I don't know who did this video or maybe this illustration, but it's as if a robe were put on him that had all the different types of sins on them. Liar, fornicator, pornographer, adulterer, murderer, abortion doctor, all of it put on him. That is what he was doing, starting in the garden, accomplished on the cross with his death, burial, and resurrection. Maybe Joseph of Arimathea got that day. Something happened to a point where Joseph, that trembling and fearful man, boldly went to Pilate. And he claimed the body of Jesus Christ. And Joseph had the privilege of taking down the Son of God off the cross. Have you ever wondered what it would be like in reality for him to reach up and take hold of the cold, stained, lifeless hand of the carpenter from Nazareth and rip it from those 6-inch barbs? And think to himself, these were the hands that once held nails and wood being held by nails and wood. These were the hands that fed multitudes with bread, the bread of life, as he gazed into those lifeless eyes of Jesus Christ and saw death gripped in those icy eyes. These are once the warm eyes filled with a life, the life of God that brought conviction of sin to multitudes. And he reached down to pull his feet from the cross, those blood-stained feet that walked the shores of Galilee. The beautiful feet that preach the gospel of peace. That is what Joseph of Arimathea saw. and he was no longer a man who feared men, because he saw the one identified with our sin die for us, that we might become the righteousness of God. That is what Sunday morning should be about. And until tomorrow, go serve your King.